Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the February minisode for the Banging Book Club, our fortnightly podcast where we read books about sex and gender and discuss them. I'm Hannah Witten, and don't worry, Lucy and Lena will be making appearances later, but I just thought I'd let you know how this minisode is going to go. So after we read 50 Shades of Grey last month, we had loads of chats about BDSM and the kink community, but the three of us don't really know all that much about it. So I invited Molly Moore, who is a sex blogger and writer at mollysdailykiss.com, and she is the director of operations at Eroticon UK, which is a convention conference thing for loads of sex writers. You can find out more at eroticon.co. And Molly is also in a sub-dom relationship with her husband, and so I had a Skype call with her to ask her all about that. And so the first half of this podcast is going to be me chatting with Molly, and then the second half of this podcast is going to be me and Lena Norms and Lucy Moon chatting about 50 Shades Darker, the new 50 Shades of Grey film, with our friend Simon Kane. We invited Simon along to join us for the film review section as our resident BDSM kink person. I hope you enjoy this podcast. Over to myself, Hannah, and Molly. So I've got so many questions for you about sub-dom relationships, BDSM stuff, 50 Shades critique. So thanks, first of all, for allowing me to pick your brain about all of this stuff.
You're most welcome. I'm looking forward to it.
So first of all, I just kind of wanted to draw on your experiences. So I had a read on your blog, and you said that you are in a sub-dom relationship with your husband. You are the submissive and your husband is the dominant. Mm-hmm. And then I had a look on his Twitter, and his Twitter bio is proud owner of Molly's Daily Kiss.
Yeah.
I just want to know, what's that like? How does that work? And as someone who is kind of like new to learning about this whole world, when I see something that says like proud owner, like I feel uncomfortable. But mm-hmm. I want you to challenge that for me, basically.
Okay. Here it goes. I'll give it my best shot. So I think those words, when you just look at them in that context, mm-hmm. do sit, feel very loaded and obviously mean something to us in different contexts. So it's very easy to read that and go, that makes me really uncomfortable. I think the thing to then look at more is about the situation that that's been developed in. And for us, this is a consensual relationship. This is something that makes us both happy and fulfilled, and we fit in those roles perfectly together. We are at our best being those things for each other. It makes us comfortable. It makes us very happy. So we always have always said that we are a relationship of two equals. We came into this as equals, where we negotiated an inequality that makes us happy.
So is that something that before you established the relationship, obviously you negotiated it all, and does the negotiation, is that fluid? Are you still negotiating like every day? Does it change?
Always. I think that if you don't do that, then you are in you find yourself in tricky water, because we are constantly as humans growing and evolving and learning and developing in all kinds of ways, but particularly when you're talking about relationships. And so if your relationship isn't able to be fluid in that sense and change and adapt as you both change and adapt and learn about the things that you like and don't like, then I think that that is probably a much more difficult situation, and probably one that would raise what I would refer to as red flags for me. Mm-hmm. That if someone felt that they were in a situation where change wasn't possible, that would, I think, just be, I mean, you know, then you're into a situation where you're kind of starting to go, well, is this actually in a potentially abusive situation? And I think just with the reference to 50 Shades, that was always one of my difficulties, particularly with the contract. He presents that to her kind of almost like a rent agreement would, like a landlord who would say, here's the deal, sign it or don't. And for me, and I think for a lot of the BDSM community, that's not how it works, because that's something that you work out together, where you explore those things together and you decide together which are the things that you want to be kind of under that umbrella, which are the things that you aren't. And also, just as you go along, you learn things about yourself and you go, oh, you know what? I've discovered I really like whatever. But I've also discovered, actually, I thought I might like this, but I don't.
And I think, you know, those principles extend to any relationship as well. It's quite interesting, the more I've learned about like the BDSM community and how core communication is to making those relationships healthy and also like as risk-free as possible. Mm-hmm. And I feel like non-kink relationships often need to kind of like take some of that advice.
No, I completely
agree. And
like
some of the same practices.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that a lot of non-kink relationships could do with adopting some of the skills that you learn as part of a good kink relationship, simply because that it gets you into a place where, I mean, for a start, where communication is absolutely core, where you have to be able to talk openly and state the things that you want, don't want, like, don't like. You have to be able to listen. Mm-hmm. And obviously also within the frames, I mean, within a DS relationship, how you do that may be slightly different. And again, no DS relationship is the same. That's the other thing. A lot of my friends, our DS relationships have similarities, but they're not the same. How we manage them, or the things that we that are included under our DS umbrella or not included under our DS umbrella, will be different for different couples. I mean, one of the things as well that I always say is that DS, what that means for you, is up to you to define. There's no right or wrong.
So what does that mean for you then? What does being a submissive or someone's possession, like how does that work in your relationship? And is it just in the bedroom, or does it extend outside of that?
It's not just in the bedroom. It extends outside that. We would say that we have a 24/7 DS relationship. So he is always the dom and I'm always the submissive. I think that there's a lot of misunderstanding possibly about what those words mean. For me and for us, there's a difference between him being dominating, or him being the dominant, and him being domineering. Yeah. Domineering would mean that, you know, he was kind of overbearing, demanding, constantly, you know, wanting to be the center of attention kind of thing, and keeping me suppressed and quiet. And in fact, it's quite the opposite. He would say that his role is actually to encourage me to be all the things that I want to be. So he's my biggest champion. He's the person behind me going, you know, you can do this, you can do this, you know, and support me in all those things. And as a submissive, again, a lot of people think that being submissive means that you are quiet and meek and mild and patient, and I'm not any of those things. I am feisty and independent, opinionated, in the, you know, in the sense that I have an opinion, and all those things he actually likes. He likes that I am those things, and would encourage, you know, he would encourage me to have an opinion and to share my opinion and to even disagree with his opinion. The difference being, I guess, maybe than in other relationships, is that we have negotiated a situation where if I wanted to disagree my opinion, and I do, it would be done in a respectful manner. And I think that that is also based on the fact that we have excellent communication. And so it's very easy for us to talk to each other about what, you know, variety of different subjects, whatever they may be. And once you have established very good communication, it's very easy to then spread that into other areas of your life. So whether you're talking about politics or where you're going to go and eat dinner. But for us day to day, I mean, I wear a collar of some description. I don't actually currently right this minute have it on because I'm about to go out to the gym once we finish this. So. But I wear a collar.
Is that more of a symbolic thing or is it a functional thing?
It's more, I guess it's more, you could call it more of a symbolic thing, a bit like wearing a wedding ring. I do wear a wedding ring as well because we are also married. So it is definitely a symbol of our relationship. I will call him sir most of the time. That's just again what we like and what we enjoy, but there are other people who would use different words for that, and there are other people who wouldn't have a title at all, so it would very much depend on, as I said, on the DS relationship that you've negotiated. You know, I have friends who wouldn't use any kind of title for their partner. I have other friends who maybe would call them master or maybe have made up a word that means something to them. It really depends. We like sir.
I wanted to kind of move on to the more like bondage BDSM element of your relationship. So I was having a read about things and you said that you have a safe word. And I thought your blog about your safe word I found really interesting. My previous thinking of a safe word was that like you say the safe word and then it all stops and you're fine. But I like the way that you described the safe word as being a seatbelt, because in a kink relationship it's never going to be completely risk-free. There'll always be risks.
I mean everything that you do, the minute we step out of bed in the morning and certainly the minute we leave our home, there is risk in our life. And every relationship that you have with somebody involves risk. You have to expose yourself to the risk of being made to feel vulnerable, being hurt, being left. Everything has an element of risk. And something that we learn as children is how to assess risk. And we do it all day, every day. And then we decide how we're going to proceed. And that's only really the same. I mean, in kink, it's a kind of more developed version of that. So some of the things that we do, some of the physical things that we do definitely have risk involved, but then pretty much everything that we all do as humans every day does, and we just decide whether we're going to do them or not. And I think the seatbelt analogy works. We like that analogy because nothing makes something completely risk-free.
Yeah.
And so a bit like a seatbelt, the seatbelt doesn't stop you having an accident, but what it does is it hopefully means that your head doesn't get ripped off if you have an accident. And so, I mean, that's a bit extreme, but that's the kind of idea, I think, with a safe word, is that it doesn't mean that you won't get something wrong, because we're all fallible because we're human. But having a safe word in place may, and I will say only may mean that when you do get something wrong, you can limit the damage that you may do in that process.
And the other thing that I really liked that you mentioned is that a safe word, the existence of a safe word, allows you to explore like resistance play.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I have a kink, I have a big thing for consensual non-consent. Being able to say no and stop and I don't want you to do that and fighting back actually turn me on. They are part of my kink. So, the more I can say them in a way where they sound realistic. If you were just watching from the outside, you'd be going, oh, there's a bad thing happening to Molly right now. I'm actually getting off on that. That's, you know, a huge turn on for me.
And by
so
having the safe word,
gives me a different level of communication where actually no actually doesn't need to mean no, because this other word actually means no. And so then I can let myself go into the kind of, I don't know, role play aspect, I guess, if you want to call it that, of consensual non-consent.
So this may feel like a really weird kind of topic to explore, but it's something that I've always been really curious about. So you have kids, right?
I do indeed.
And how old are they, and what's their awareness of your relationship?
My children are 17 and nearly 14, and a boy and a girl, and their awareness of our relationship, I think we would say, is a real awareness that probably any children have. So the other thing I should say is that they are my children.
Okay, yeah.
This is a second marriage, so Michael, who's my husband, is their step parent. So they're aware of our adult relationship in the way that I think any kids are of their parents, that we have one because of the nature of the work that I do, because of Eroticon and because that I write what I do. They are possibly a little bit more aware than because I have never hugely hidden from them my work, because I don't think that's a very healthy thing to do. And so I have brought them up in a very open manner, where I have always, in an age-appropriate way, obviously, as they've got older, those conversations have changed. We have very open conversations. I've, you know, been very proactive about teaching them about, you know, consent and talking to partners and safe sex and, you know, relationships, yeah, and sexuality and gender.
I have a question that maybe you have some insight into. So how do you teach young people about healthy relationships and consent and all of these things? And on top of that, also educate them in being open-minded and not kink shaming. For example, like in some kink relationships, it can be part of their healthy relationship that there might be like beating involved, or like resistance and like scenes that look non-consensual but they are consensual. So how do you, I guess, teach about general and normal, and I'm using normal in inverted commas, healthy relationships where you're not smacking your partner and you're not having sex with them without their consent? How do you teach that, but on top of that also teach, oh, but some people do it, but it's consensual, and like, you know, there's just so many footnotes.
There are. And I think that's the, I think that's the problem that we have with sex ed in this country, is that it's tried to be taught in too much of a box of, you know, if we cover these six basic topics, then we're done. When actually for me, it's an ongoing project, really, from when they're very little, where you start when they're very young, where you say to them, you know, no, don't touch your friend like that. Yeah. You need to ask your friend if it's okay for you to do that, you know?
Exactly.
So those, I mean, the conversation around consent is one that I think needs to be started much younger. It's about helping them to set their own personal boundaries as well, and to know that you can explore yourself in whatever way. And that, I mean, again, I think it's about conversing with them in an open and honest framework. It's not something that you can like sit down and give a lesson to and then tick that box and go, okay, so they've got that.
Like, done, my worker is done. No need to talk about it ever again.
Correct. And I think that's a mistake that we have made in the past. I think it's the mistake with sex ed, for quite a lot of sex ed in schools, is that it's almost like, right, well, we've had that lesson, and now I don't need to ever mention it again. I think that's, you know, where the problem lies. I think as far as bringing in kink, I think that's something that if you have laid the groundwork and you have hopefully got them to an age and a stage where you feel confident that they understand some of those kind of more basic concepts of, you know, consent and relationships and how we should talk to each other and how we should listen to people and, you know, respecting people, not being judgmental about anybody's sexuality or gender or the way they look or, you know, whatever those things are, then I think bringing in that topic of kind of consent within a kind of kink framework is easier, because you have this groundwork that you've already laid where they understand that. I think that with kink, one of the key things is to understand that there's a phrase which a lot of the community use, which is, your kink is not my kink, but your kink is okay.
Oh, I like that.
Which is basically saying, you know, so for example, I like needle play. Which is a new discovery of mine. There are people who don't like needle play, but they're still part of the kink community, but who for them, needle play would like make them go, oh my God, no.
Yeah.
The point of that phrase is to be able to say, you know what, I don't like your needle play. I don't even particularly want to see your needle play, but it's cool that you like it, and good for you, go and enjoy it.
So I've got just a few other questions that are just more general about kink or like unconventional, again, air quotes, sexuality, things that like I'm aware of that exist but have no firsthand experience of, and I just want to be like, what's that like? So like the like sex clubs, because you've like mentioned clubs a few times in some blog posts. What are they like? How does it work?
So again, it would depend on what you were, on what type of club you were going to. Mm-hmm. So as a general rule, there is quite a split between kind of fetish BDSM type clubs and then what would be seen as more traditional kind of sex clubs, or would also be known as swingers clubs.
Yeah.
As a general rule, they're kind of different things, but not always. Sometimes they overlap. But a swingers club, it's going to be more about the kind of sexual interaction between people. There will be people swinging there. There will be many people who just go to watch. There'll be many people who go to have sex with their partner, not with other people, but they get off on the fact that other people are watching them.
Uh-huh.
So not all people at swingers clubs are swinging. Fetish BDSM clubs, again, they're a bit of a, you know, a mix of what you would find there. Some of them will be more about the dressing up, and there will be perhaps a dungeon area to play. The atmosphere of the club is a lot more about what people are wearing and the kind of pomp and ceremony, maybe. And then you'll go to other fetish BDSM clubs, which will be much more about people have going there to use the dungeon type. I'm using dungeon because that's what they will call it. But, yeah. You know, the BDSM type equipment
doesn't necessarily have to look like a dungeon.
Because most of us do not have a red room of pain. Because, A, we have children in our houses. And two, who the hell can afford that?
That's so interesting. I haven't even thought about that. Because obviously Christian Grey can afford it because he's like a billionaire.
99.9% of the kink community does not have their version of a red room of pain at home.
Yeah,
there are certainly people who may have the odd thing at home that they kind of tuck away. Or, you know, obviously if you're in a relationship where perhaps either you don't have kids yet, or, you know, those kinds of things, then maybe you would have, you know, perhaps adapted your bed with
restraints or whatever.
Restraint points and, you know, stuff like that. But the actual idea that kind of people have a dungeon at home is mainly not the case. So if you want to have access, and lots of people do want to have access to that, you know, maybe use a St. Andrew's cross, use a spanking bench, use a cage, I mean, all kinds of different things, those kind of bigger, larger pieces of equipment. Yeah. Then people will tend to try and go to a club, or even hire. There are actually private dungeons that you can hire.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that, if there are private ones.
There are private ones. There's a few in London, and there's a few out of London as well, that you can go and hire just for like a couple of hours in the afternoon. Some of them actually do hire where there's a bedroom, so you can like hire them overnight, almost like a kind of bed and breakfast type thing.
And so finally, in the 50 Shades of Grey podcast that we did with Lena and Lucy, where we were discussing the book, towards the end we were like, someone recommend us good erotica, like what is this? And you have a list, or you have some recommendations, is that right?
I have a few recommendations, and afterwards as well, because this, I only just started jotting them down, I will see if I can think of any more as well and perhaps send you some stuff, then
you can
kind of dig through it. There's some great, really 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 great erotica writers out there, writing in all kinds of slightly different ways, different genres within erotica. One of the people I would recommend is Christina Lloyd, and that's Christina with a K. She's written quite a few different books, and I would happily say buy a Christina Lloyd book. You aren't going to be disappointed, in my opinion. She's a great writer. She's a really, really great writer, and her stories are really, really excellent. Janine Ashbliss is also a great writer, but tends to write in the more fantasy realm.
Oh, cool.
So kind of fantasy slash erotica. But I highly recommend her book, Cover Him With Darkness. And the second book in that, that's a three-book series, I believe. Uh-huh. And the second book is being released in March.
Okay, cool.
And I can't wait, because the first book was brilliant. It's an absolutely, if you like good storytelling, she's very, very clever. It's about kind of angels and mythology. KD Grace, another great writer. And again, I mean, she's written a lot of stuff. Some of it will be, she's written kind of some vampire stuff, but she's written what I would call more just, you know, modern day storytelling stuff. But definitely good erotica. And, you know, pick a KD Grace book and have a go.
Great. For those listeners who didn't quite catch some of those, I will leave them in the description so you can have a search for them online and get your hands on some decent erotica. Thank you so much, Molly, for letting me just quiz you on all of these
things. You're more than welcome. And if you have any follow-up questions or you want to explore this subject more, I'm always happy to do it again.
Oh, thank you so much. And guys, don't forget to go follow Molly on Twitter. You are at Molly's Daily Kiss. Is that right?
That's correct.
Yeah. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We are all here and we're all ready to review the film 50 Shades Darker. I'm Hannah Whitten.
I'm Lena North.
I'm Lucy Moon.
I'm Simon Kane.
Who are you, Simon? What's who are you doing? Who are you?
Simon.
So weird.
Hi. I'm here to be the kink person. We're just
three vanilla women, you know? And we just don't know what to do with ourselves.
That's not what I was told this was going to be. Okay, no, yeah.
You are a comedian. You run like a kink and LGBT friendly comedy night.
Yeah, yeah. It's really cool. It's called Queer as Jokes.
Oh, I like it.
Yeah. Oh. It's nice. I thought it was quite cool. I run it at the Bill Murray and Angel, and it's fine. It's like a monthly thing where I just have a lineup of just like anyone who is linked to the LGBTQ who I think is really, really good at stand up. And then we have like a really supportive crowd of just generally quite queer people who just are up for hearing different perspectives, not just my ex did this or whatever in stand-up.
Sure, so, I like that. I think that's really cool. So we've all seen 50 Shades Darker. Shall we do sound reviews?
Some of us watch it next to Katie Price.
Yes,
but who am I?
Guys,
thanks, babe.
Lucy went to the premiere
and completely forgot I was going to the premiere. So I arranged with Lena to go.
Yeah,
see
and
the
then
film,
she texted me like, "Sorry, babe, forgot I was invited to the premiere. Can't come." Yeah, it's like, all right, Phoebe. Yeah.
Is that why you text me?
Sound reviews.
My sound review is.
That sounded like it started well.
Is that when the credits rolled?
It was so peaceful again in my head.
My sound review is...
My sound review is head desk. I'm not actually going to whack my head on the desk because that might peak, but head desk.
You're such a half Ravenclaw.
What do you mean?
Like, I'm not going to actually do it because technically that would really ruin the audio recorder.
Where's your drama, Hannah?
Sound reviews, Simon.
There you go.
Yeah. Okay.
Just that.
That's great. So I have some notes. They are not like full notes. Also, like none of us like know anything about film.
Did you make it in the cinema?
No. Oh. Does my handwriting that bad? It looks like I wrote it in the dark.
No, I just wondered if you'd gone in just going, right.
You would.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
First of all, we should clarify that 50 Shades Darker is the second film in the 50 Shades of Grey series.
So we've just read the first book, haven't we?
Yeah,
and that's podcast. The last available for you to listen to.
On iTunes with your ears. I've seen the first film, which I actually quite enjoyed. And then I read the book, which we've all heard my thoughts on that. Have you guys seen the first film?
No.
Nope.
I know.
Okay.
I specifically didn't watch it. A friend tried to lend me it.
Have you read the books?
Nope.
Okay, so this is your like introduction to 50 Shades.
Yeah.
World. All I'm going to say, and I acknowledge that I'm also a Twilight defender.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. A massive fan of The Host. But all I'm going to say is I didn't think the first film was that bad. Actually, I thought it was well executed and more believable than the book. And also it ends with her leaving, which was a lot more hopeful than this.
Yeah. I got that from the start of the second film. Mm-hmm. Are we allowed to do spoilers?
Yeah. Okay, spoilers.
Yeah, I got that from the start of the first film because he was trying to get her back by any means possible, which is probably the lightest way of putting it.
Yeah.
So...
I also very much enjoyed the first film, but I don't know whether that memory of it is very much about the circumstances I was in when I watched it, which was drunk on a plane with Dodie and Callum.
Oh my god, that would make it so
good.
Fun.
Were they watching the same film?
Yeah, we were like 3, 2, 1 and play whilst we ordered gin and tonics.
Nice.
That sounds fun.
Anyone can chime in at any point, but here are my notes. The first thing is sex with trousers on. So out of the four sex scenes, I think there were four sex scenes that we saw, three of them, Christian Grey kept his trousers on.
Do we think that the actor got a really inappropriate tattoo between the filming of the first and second films?
But also, on his any eye. Shots of Anastasia's bottom half when Dakota Johnson's face is not in it, in my head I was like, that's got to be a butt double.
Because it's come on. Butt.
But also just
little dimples.
No, but because they're, you know, Hollywood actors, every Hollywood actor has got a butt double.
Do they?
Do they?
Yeah, a lot of
I
them
I don't
were.
Want them to think that, because I've seen Neil Patrick Harris's butt, and I like
Might
it.
Not be Neil Patrick
no,
Harris's butt.
No, don't ruin that for me. It's got a great butt.
I did not know people had butt doubles.
Yeah,
are you
I'm
wishing
pretty
you had
sure
a butt double now for YouTube?
No, I don't need a butt double.
Oh, sorry, babe. Sorry, babe. Oh, my God. I did not mean to just assault your butt.
Tweeting that.
Hashtag, Lucy, don't need no butt double.
I didn't
oh,
know
no, and his body and the thrust.
Weren't you also immersed in the amazing narrative terms of the film? How did you manage to notice this during all of this?
You know what the thing I noticed most about the sex scenes was? Yeah, I'm sorry, we will get onto the actual narrative.
I feel like we just need to
cray.
Talk about the sex scenes.
Yeah.
Just cleanse ourselves of that.
Not as many of them as I thought there'd be.
No,
I was
but it was pretty dry.
Yeah.
Sorry, Lucy.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
But the thing was, the first of all, focused on female pleasure. I noticed there's a lot of like going down. Yeah, bit of nipple sucking, like ooh. And then there's when they start having like penetrative sex. The thrusting is the most awkward thing I've ever seen.
Yeah,
it's totally
what the hell
unbelievable.
Is it?
It's like thrust, pause. More dramatic thrust. Pause. Like, it was really.
There was no dancing.
The problem I have with that is, and I agree with you, it's freaking awkward.
No, but do you know what I mean? It's like partners. Oh. Anyway.
Well, no, I was going to say the thing I noticed about that was that the thrusting was in time with the music, and I felt that they edited it to be like that.
Oh, that could be it.
The soundtrack was great.
Oh,
put
that's
that
Danny Elfman. He's amazing.
Great soundtrack.
Yeah. But I just thought they were just trying to make the beat.
I mean, we've all tried to have sex to music.
Doesn't work.
No. Why can't we all have, what's his name, Danny?
Danny Elfman.
Him doing the soundtrack to our sex lives. That'd be great.
Tweet him now.
Should we talk about plot? And plot in air quotes?
That'd be a very quick. Yeah, let's go on.
I mean, its defense.
No.
It is the very reminiscent of the plot line of the second Twilight series. And that's what it was written for, right?
Yeah.
So, like, if we were going on what framework and what benchmark she was setting herself, she kind of achieved it. That's essentially what happens in New Moon.
How's that different? That's like saying, right, I copied the whole book,
well, what
but
were you
I changed
trying to
the
do?
Characters.
No, but fanfic is an actual legit thing that is okay to do.
I've not really seen any. This is the most fanfiction I've ever come into.
Okay, but that is what she was trying to achieve, and she, in some ways, she achieved that.
Do you know what I did? I text Lena in the morning. I said, I'm talking to a friend for like an hour before I meet you who loves Fifty Shades, just to get myself into a good mindset for it, because I had a lot of preconceptions. And I was like, I just want to think something good about it.
Yeah.
And so they banged on about how amazing it was. And then, yeah, I didn't. But
you
that's
tried.
A good positive.
Well, one of the things that I found really interesting is that the BDSM stuff was very light.
Yeah.
Compared to at least the first book in this film. And I feel like it feels really kink shamey to me. Because I don't know, Simon, if you would agree or how you feel about it. But for me, it was just like, this relationship would be perfect, and they're so made for each other, if only Christian Grey would not be into BDSM. If he wasn't into BDSM, and just every so often just tied Anastasia up, that'd be great. But it really shames that as like, oh, the relationship can't work if he has these desires and these needs, which are like totally fine
if the other person's into it. Anastasia isn't into it. The relationship shouldn't work. What the fuck? They get give engaged. Up, no.
Spoiler.
A later manifestation of everybody's obsession with Romeo and Juliet, and it's like the star-crossed lovers will win through, and it's like no,
no they don't.
People who fit each other should get married. People who don't fit each other shouldn't.
They don't fit each other.
Love's not enough. Just you know, it doesn't always have to be enough. Just. Get on, get
I don't believe their and love also, for 1 second.
I don't believe they get on. They barely
they
talk
have no
this
chemistry.
Entire film. They, yeah, like, I've... I, like,
no banter.
Not even as fuck buddies. I reckon that was the most awkward... Like you said, it was like they'd been like pandas in like a cage and been like, you can only do each other. And like, no. Just,
yeah. After watching that film, I'm more convinced that Anastasia just fancies him because of money.
Yeah, so the classic boy is real, isn't it?
No, you say that, but the thing was we were talking about after the film was, like, every time he gives her a gift, she's just like, I don't want that.
But she still loves it, though.
Yeah, she still kind of, you can see she kind of likes it. But
she loves her classic Jane Austen novels because she's really into English things. I don't know if you know, but her favourite tea is English breakfast.
I love how that's your big problem in that.
Like, yeah.
What did you think about the sex, Simon? In 50 Shades.
Yeah,
the kink or the sex? Because I just noticed them separately. So
okay.
Which explain.
For me, kink doesn't always have to be sexual. So I always keep the in my head they're separate. I mean, they could lead to each other, but generally speaking, I have them as separate things in my head. So I can talk about the four sex scenes, or I can talk about the kink.
Oh, talk about the kink then. Okay. Which bits would you classify as just the kink?
Well, that was the problem, is that they were in like tandem with each other, so like with the leg bar or whatever they were. In fact, that was pretty much the only, aside from the domination over the, what's the other girl's name,
Leela,
is it Leela, the one that he made kneel?
Yeah,
that was like a really
say what you said about the Leela thing, because I thought it was interesting.
Okay, so in
Leela is this character who is a previous sub of Christian who comes back and tries to kill Anastasia.
Yeah, that's
there we go.
That's her only bit in that entire plot.
Yeah.
So there was a bit in the film where I'd have to say that, do I? Mm-hmm. Where she's got a gun to Anastasia and I forgot his name. Christian comes in and makes her kneel and then give the gun over and stuff. And in the room with the film we were in, everyone just went, like, and then like we heard people going, that's not real, that's not whatever. And like in a healthy subdom relationship, that could be something that you've set up before where if, especially if you're in a lifestyle situation where it's 24/7, you might have a thing where you can just ask someone to do something there and then and they just have to do it. Whereas in that situation, that was very unhealthy in my perspective because they weren't in a relationship. He was just, and the problem I've got with that is that he was trying to control a situation.
The relationship had ended, so he should have relinquished the control over her.
Exactly. Well, but she should have as well, because she was complicit in it. So it made me feel really uncomfortable about the whole thing, because not only was she okay with the whole just being demanded around, which I think was what she was into anyway, but also she'd made the situation into the thing that he, how else was he going to deal with that situation? Because so he'd got a gun to the person who he's meant to be marrying, or I don't know if they get married by that point. I forgot. That's the only plot point, and I've forgotten it.
I think they've moved in.
Yeah. But the point is that how else would you deal with that situation? If I was him, I'd be like, that's the only way I can think to deal with it as well. Because how am I going to take the gun out of her hand if I haven't got no control in the situation? So I felt like it was a really weirdly manipulative situation and a very bad display of what a subdom situation can be in kink.
I feel like it displayed sub as like weakness.
This is the thing, I really get annoyed by this, because subbing is actually the stronger position in all of it, because subs have they have all the strength in every situation. They have the safe words, they get a call when things get to stop. The dom obviously has that position as well, but ultimately the sub has to have that position more so because they're having stuff done to them.
Yeah.
And the whole point of kink, healthy kink anyway, is the turn on is the trust element and the communication element of being able to do something to someone that you know is safe but doesn't feel safe. You've created like a fantasy situation.
Yeah.
And that didn't feel like that to me. That felt very horrible. And the rest of it did as well. Where like, you know, I just hated it.
I didn't like this film. I just wanted to say that just in general, 50 Shades aside, kink BDSM representations aside, this was a bad film.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I have many reasons as to why this is a bad film. And I want to talk about all of them.
what was your cinema experience like? Because me and Simon went together and the whole auditorium was laughing at bits that I'm pretty sure the director didn't want to be funny, and yeah. Everyone was so vocal, and when stuff happened, they'd be like, oh! It was like being
really?
in an Elizabeth
the cinema theater. I was in was yeah. silent.
No, oh, so no. Ours was like...
They were really talkative.
Okay,
yeah.
When Christian almost dies in the helicopter, no. thing, and then he literally just I walks through the door a second yeah. later, everybody, like, ripped themselves apart laughing. Like, somebody yeah. ripped yeah. themselves a new one in the front row, because they were like, ah!
I just turned to you and went, even within the fantasy of this, that's bullshit. Yeah. Like, there's no...
We literally like, what is the
chance? Yeah, briefly talk about this ridiculous. I was saying to the girls earlier, within about half an hour, Christian nearly dies, comes back to life, like walks through a door. So the family has gone, you as the audience, you've gone from being incredibly worried and upset, theoretically, to overjoyed, to then like relief. And then he proposes within that like other half.
Which is half she, hour. He'd already proposed. She said yes after the, yeah. Can I, the helicopter sorry. Crash, I'm so, it was an entirely pointless plot device. Nothing, you know, things happen, events happen in stories to move a plot along, to change the course of a situation, like a character changes, the situation changes, something changes. When fucking event happens in a movie, nothing changed after that helicopter crash. Nothing changed. There was no point in it. Like, you could have written out, sorry, you just want to sorry. Talk, but I'm just helicopter crash is pointless. Also, HR lady at the beginning the publishing thing, and HR lady comes up. She's just a plot device. You'd think that she was coming up those stairs, marching down the office to then go have a meeting with Jack Hyde. No, they just have a conversation about how creepy he is, and then she leaves. And I was like, well, why did you came to it from... Come on, were you not here for something?
Can I just say, the only bits that really got me off in this whole film were the publishing bits. Like, oh my God, you do need to move to digital. There are new ways to print. We need new voices in literature.
No, yeah. I was like, yes!
There was one moment where they just went, oh, this blog has got 80,000 hits and we can... And they were like, we can't translate them. They went, yeah, we can. And I literally turned to you and you were just like, oh, like, yeah!
True.
Like, talk publishing to me, baby.
Like, sales are hard to translate from digital click-through.
No, not necessarily. It depends on the relationship. Right, but anyway, yes. Fine. But we were
I was sat there in that bit. I was like, yeah, bitches, my book's out. Yeah. Take the paper.
we were doing it. No, the only, I want to say, because I've had this debate with someone recently about that plot point.
Yeah.
And the only reason we can work out why that would be in there is so that the build, which it wasn't a build, but it should have been a build to when she says yes.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah. And it didn't build. And because it didn't build, you're right, it could just come out. On paper, that would have been a really good build. It's like, oh, does she lose him? But then he had the answer in his pocket. And even that line, the answer was in my pocket the whole time. I was like, oh, fuck off.
The worst line. Are you for real?
The key ring thing was stupid.
I like the key ring thing, but then I think...
It was so ridiculous.
The problem I've got is the line between romantic and creepy is how attractive the other person finds you. And I find...
Oh my God. That would just need that on a t-shirt.
All right, can I have a copy? No. But the point is that they both clearly are attracted to each other, which is why the key ring thing's cute. But to us, we've got no dynamic there to them. So as a result, the whole thing looks creepy and cringy.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, because there's so much that you wouldn't portray in a film that actually happens in a relationship, because you're like, audience won't resonate.
Yeah.
Because they're not as emotionally invested.
No, but they didn't give me enough time between each emotion to feel it. Like, he'd go, oh, you nearly died. Oh, you nearly lived. Oh, he did this. And it's like, just... And then around them, they'll just go, oh, let's have sex, because that'll solve everything. And it's like, that never solves everything. If anything, that makes it worse, because you're not thinking straight. Oh, I've got no blood in my head.
Do you know what, actually? I did like that vulnerable shower scene. Where they're vulnerable in the shower. Not because I don't know, there's a bit where she's saying something to him and it's kind of, I felt a little bit emotion. That was the one bit.
Oh, and she rubs.
Oh my God, when he like still has the lipstick on him after 2 days, when he takes it off, the lipstick's still there. I'm like, no lipstick is that good.
Do you know what I love? I turned to Lena.
There's no lipstick on his shirt as well. There's no lip off on the shirt.
I turned to Lena.
Maybe it's Kylie Jenner's lip kit, but it didn't look like it to me.
The first thing I said to you when he took his shirt off for the second day, I just went, is that real? Like, because
does lipstick last that long? And I was like, no, carry on watching.
I've had makeup done to me before, but like I've taken it off, so I've never left it on for long enough to work out how long it lasts for.
Me, you don't want to. It like gradually smears.
I know.
Yeah, that was totally unrealistic.
But maybe she redraws it every day to make sure she doesn't go across his boundaries. Because she doesn't want to go across his boundaries, but he's perfectly happy to go across all of her... Sorry.
Yeah.
Ooh. So there's loads more things that I think we can complain about and laugh about, but I kind of want to bring the tone down and mention a very scary scene of her in the office with her boss, Jack Hyde, when basically he could have raped her in that situation. I felt very uncomfortable. And I think that's probably maybe the only scene that's done well, depending on what its intention was. If it was to frighten you, yes, it frightened me.
Yeah. It made me feel angsty. He is
a prototype
antagonist.
I think it was there. If I was thinking that it was well thought through, I think they put it there to show that he is the example of like the bad side of that kind of abuse. And he's who we think Christian is. Yeah. But in fact, Christian is somebody who puts contracts in place and asks everybody to be there as, like, the good guy. So I think he's there to set up the idea of Christian being the good guy against the real-world reality of abuse, which is people like Jack Hyde. Not
who lock you in rooms.
Don't agree with it, but I think that is the way that it's set up to juxtapose Christian being the one who's, like, organised his abuse.
The only reason why that works is because in the film, you don't get enough people in the... You can't have so many characters that it will work as a thing. So you need a specific, like, opposition character like that. Yeah, but they're both shit. Like, you can't just go, he's not as bad as him, so it's cool. Because it's like... Get some self-respect and go and find someone else.
Pretty sure I've done that, though. I've gone, I'm going to date this guy because he's not as bad as that guy.
That's fair. I've probably done the same thing.
In those situations, you should date no one. Date none of them. That is the answer. And then the Jack Hyde thing. I was really confused about who the antagonist was in this film. Because there's basically, like, three different antagonists who all come up at different points and none of them are resolved. Like, none of them get their true antagonistic moment and then they...
Mrs. Robinson.
I went to the toilet during that, so I missed that bit. but I heard everyone kind of be like, yeah!
So there's Leela, Jack Hyde, and Mrs. Robinson. And we assume from the final shot that we see that Jack Hyde probably comes back in the third one.
Who he was with the cigarette. Sorry.
I assume that was Jack Hyde with the cigarette.
Oh, right, because remember we left and you were like, oh, who do you think that was? And I was like, I didn't care about the one I just watched, let alone about the future one.
You probably forgot about that because Jack was dealt with in like the first like third of the film and then he's left. And then Leela is the same. Leela was dealt with in the middle bit of the film and then left. And then Mrs. Robinson was dealt with in the final third of the film and then left. It was like, what is the plot? What is the plot to this film?
But the thing is, if you take... Sorry, go on.
I can't remember what Miss Robinson's thing is, but doesn't that to do with being punched? Doesn't he, like, slap her or something?
No.
Is that his first dom? Sorry, is that...
The older woman.
Anna throws a drink in Mrs. Robinson's face at a party where Mrs. Robinson's being all like, you're not right for each other.
He's not like you.
Yeah, and then Christian's mum comes along and slaps Mrs. Robinson, which I was just like, wait a second, because they're friends, and Christian's mum does not know that they had a relationship.
But that was the moment she found out.
This is the thing, I feel like that was the only...
That was how it was explained.
I was just like, oh, has Christian's mum found out about it? The only other thing that I thought was like kind of interesting was the revelation that Christian likes to... inflict pain on women that look like his crack addict mother.
Yeah,
this is the thing. There were bits in it where he
learned something.
Where he displayed a remarkable amount of self awareness, or he's in therapy and we're not seeing that in those sessions because it felt like
he talks about he has a therapist.
Oh, is it? Because that would have made that bloody plot way better. He kept just dropping bombs in it. Like,
yeah,
like,
oh my god,
it's like I can't remember the end of the song. It's like I'll remember it in a sec. But you know, like where like. Just don't keep adding things in when you haven't given me any context for them. Yeah. That's why the plot didn't work for me. If he'd gone to a therapy session and had a revelation and gone, oh, they're all like my mum or something, and then you'd go, oh, okay, that makes sense.
Because you have no idea where that thought came from him.
Yeah, but also, because when he says stuff like that, all I'm thinking is, deal with that then. You're not in a position to be dating anyone right now. All you seem to have done is worked on your business side of you and avoided issues for the rest of your life. Like, and that's fine because, you know, you're not doing anyone any harm some businessmen would have done. But, you know, go and work on yourself now. You've got the money, you've got the time, resources, bloody hell. Sorry.
I think Anastasia's painted as having this unconditional love for Christian, which I don't think is necessarily healthy, but it's like quite familiar in a lot of plot lines where it's like, oh, but she loves him despite. And it reminds me of this song in Guys and Dolls that's like, marry the man today, change his ways tomorrow. Easy as fuck.
No.
It paints a really horrible depiction of, and don't get me wrong, there are people in the kink scene who you know use it for the wrong means and whatever, but there are perfectly healthy people who use it just because they like hitting people, and like they're not using it.
And they find people that like being get.
Oh yeah. Sorry, yeah. Sorry, I should point that out. It's all well, for the most part,
And it's not related to abuse.
No, like, no,
it's awful.
It's all for pleasure.
Do you think this film was rehashing like a lot of stereotypes about BDSM relationships like that? Do you think it's so familiar that I don't know?
When I put a thing on Facebook saying a joke, in fact, I texted you this joke. I said I've just booked a ticket for 50 Shades of Grey, and my credit card didn't flag it or do it, and I'm really disappointed. They like it was a split between my kink friends who were like, why are you wasting your time and money on that? And my regular friends who are like, oh, let us know if it's worth going to see and whatever. I think if you're in kink, like, they're not going to be watching it because they're just getting on with it and they know...
They're having too good sex.
Yeah, exactly. We're too busy spanking each other, guys. Like, we ain't got enough time for that shit. I think they've got enough of a perception on it, which is probably accurate enough, even though it's a big assumption, which you should never do in life anyway, that they don't have to go and see it. And it's only going to probably trigger a few of them, or it's going to bring up something about a negative stereotype that they're not happy with, that they won't go and see it. Mm. However, I am broadly generalising a lot of people based on my social circle. The people that were like posting saying, should we go and see it and stuff, I was like, probably not. Mm. But that's before I'd seen it, and I didn't feel good about that. But I still stick by that, because... The stereotype in it is that, first of all, there's a lot of toxic masculinity in it, which, oh, you want to tell us something about that? God.
I can ask you about toxic masculinity. Well, no. I have a lot of questions about that.
Because I tweeted about it, and one of my friends I'm meeting up with the weekend said, I'd love to know what a cis male had to say about that, because I don't understand why you would have a problem with it. And I was like, oh, I've got a lot to say. So it was toxic masculinity. It was the unrequited love thing, questioned love thing that really annoyed me. The fact that, like, she was like, take it slow 1 minute and then just take me the next minute. And you're like, just like pick a side and deal with your own hormones, because you're not helping him out here, because he clearly can't deal with
them. Because it was like, so, in 10 minutes where she was like, I think we should take it slow, and then she was like, I want you, fuck me now.
But also, it wasn't good on her part to just randomly be stroking him in that way. Like, you were not sticking, you were saying one thing and meaning another, and those mixed messages were not fair to him as much as, like, he is not in the right in any way, shape or form.
Sure.
I just think you could have helped the situation by maybe just, I don't know, pass me the knife, rather than I'll just reach through
your crotch.
Yeah, exactly.
Area.
I know what you're doing.
But and it's like, all right, well done you. Like, you managed to work out that I'm horny.
Hitting on you, Christian.
I don't know. So I think stereotypes were... But also, this is the thing, what's your stereotype of it? Because I don't know what you think a stereotype is of kink.
I don't know.
Spanking.
Well, there you go.
Spanking and blindfolds and handcuffs. That's
no, but I think there's also a stereotype of people being...
That's it. That's all you think we do.
Yeah,
I think
that's it.
Especially
okay.
In, like...
That's it, right?
No, we put foots up.
Especially in traditional press, I think a lot of these stereotypes are that people who like BDSM are like that for a reason, and the reason isn't positive.
Mm. Well, no, okay,
you
know? So...
And there's got to be something to, in inverted commas, make you like that, which is just the language that we used to talk about LGBT people with.
Yeah.
So, okay. not
And paedophiles.
Not legit.
Well, that's what I was going to say.
Let's not Alita again.
Yeah. That's a very good point, because... whatever your thing is, you can't really help you've got it for however long in your life, whether it's a period of time, it's like a thing you like, or it's your lifetime thing, you can't help what you like, and it's not fair for someone to go, well, they're like this because of this, because it might be an environmental thing, it might be an upbringing thing, but that doesn't mean that's a negative. And if it is a negative, they should be self-aware enough to acknowledge it within themselves. So for them to generalize it like that is pretty negative. So I think that would have been brought up in that, because he is... If I was someone who wasn't in kink, and I'd watched that film and I saw him say, oh, I like beating up someone who's like, you know, my mum, I've got no other frame of reference to go on that. Yeah. And so the only thing I can do is extrapolate and go, this is what this is like. And I don't think many people...
All kinky people are fucked up.
Well, yeah.
From their childhood. Do we think that because there's a lack of that representation, having this as the one representation is really damaging for people who literally will never interact with this community apart from this film?
Yeah, but it's not the only thing. That's the thing. That's the problem. I sent a friend of mine a link to a kink porn site because she was talking to me about how she was like not watching porn and stuff, and I went, why not give this a try? Like the website has like aftercare videos with the actors just to like see how they dealt with it, how they feel about it, like what they did afterwards to like feel better in themselves. I'm like, that's way
better.
There's
a whole documentary about a kink porn site or a kink porn company. We should watch it.
Yeah. I clearly don't know Banging that much about any
DVD
of this.
DVD club.
I should definitely go and look at some kink porn.
I'll send you some links.
Oh yeah, please send us all some links.
Open your incognito tab.
Yeah.
But then I've got bookmarks, you're fine.
I'm at risk of becoming that person that watches 50 Shades and stereotypes, even though I think I'm...
What's your stereotype then? Yeah, of what you think of kink from that film. Because I assume you haven't watched kink porn or had any... Lena told me you three are basically quite vanilla, so...
I don't know where the line is drawn. I think that's more...
Oh, interesting. Okay.
So I wouldn't know when something veered into, like, kinky enough. Or, like, kink enough to be...
What to, like, identify as kinky rather than just being like, sometimes I like to be hit.
Well, this is why I tend to keep them separate in my head.
Yeah.
So that if, for example, I'm spanking someone, there's no penetrative stuff going on. That, to me, is just a kink thing separate.
Yeah.
So for me, in my head, it's easier to do that. Or if they're blindfolded and we're doing, I don't know, like, wax play or ice play or something like... Do you want me to explain what that is?
I know what that is.
Okay.
Explain for me, please.
Yeah.
Wax play is essentially like a candle. It's always an unscented candle because they burn at, like, a lower temperature. So it means that the wax, when it lands on you, it's not like a burn like temperature, and you're basically like dripping wax onto someone as a sensational thing.
Heat,
and
hot.
Yeah, and generally speaking, it's, you know, you're blindfolded, so you don't quite know where it's going to land and stuff. And
the ice play is the opposite.
Yeah, very sensitive.
Cold.
Have you done it?
No.
Oh, it's very sensitive.
I would be into it though. I think I would be into it. Film 2 starts.
Okay.
Let's say we're 3 months into the relationship, and then it's only been a few days since she left him, and then the art gallery thing. Then second film, what was that? Maximum 2 months.
Less than that.
So let's say 5 months after meeting, they are engaged.
Well, they didn't even meet in the... Well, from what you told me, he followed her for like a month or something, didn't he?
Yeah, this is true. So
my mum and dad got engaged within like 6 months.
Stop it.
Yeah, but there were less people there.
And then Christian.
How old do you think
the parents are? They're Christians from the Midlands.
There were, yeah. I'm trying to validate this film. Give me a break.
And then I just have one more point. And then that's my list. My final point, I just put in all caps. No climax, plot or sexual.
You get the beginning of the sex, you get like, and then the...
He always finishes, and it's that.
But does he though?
You don't see it!
You get like
coming.
three
Do you
of
see that in the first
thrust?
One?
No,
and then
but
it's like,
in
Paul,
the
now we're
asleep.
If
in
you,
the
know,
first one,
if
you,
you
see
know what
perfect.
You're doing, three thrusts is all you need. I'm just like, come join the kink side. We know what are doing. Three for us.
Oh my god,
that is not what I believe. Just before I get like 300 people tweeting me going, dude, I don't know what you're doing, but I need to know this.
Yeah. In the book, orgasms are like such a central part of it, and like she comes and he comes, and then in the film, I was just like, you see the beginning of the sex, but then you don't see either of them finish.
Mm. But it's an 18, so you'd think they'd go all out for that.
Exactly, it was an 18. I was like,
I very rarely watch 18s. The other 18 I've ever watched is Sweeney Todd.
Was that an 18? I didn't think it was an 18, if it was a 15.
Wow, that's a lot of blood. Anyway, you should walk out of them.
Alright.
Yeah. So no sexual climax.
I'm scared of the dark and I believe in ghosts. So how about no?
I still need to talk to you about that because
worth mentioning, Soz, in most 18s, when there is sex, less graphic, but you do always see an orgasm, but it's always done like
neck down.
Yeah, like noise, and they try and create orgasm.
Were you annoyed then that you didn't see the orgasm?
Yeah, I was. I was just like, I came here for sex. but then also no claps. No.
You didn't have clap. No,
they didn't get the clap.
Spoiler.
But also no climax in terms of the plot.
Mm.
Well, to be, all it did was it left you open for like the third film. No,
the whole thing was like a films long straight
films that
road.
Are series should also be self-contained.
Do you know what it felt like? It felt like one long trailer for the third film, and then at the end, 1 minute of just, oh, actually, we had this edit. Like, we could just tell you what's going to happen. Because, like, if you think of it like that, where it just goes, dun, 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 like, there's no, like, plot or narrative, it could just be a trailer for the next one.
Ooh. There we go. I think that's how we should end this.
I think we've done it some kind of service.
It was kind of, like, shitter than a soap opera in terms of plot.
I'd say if you're going to go and see it, go...
Don't.
And, if you're going to go and see it, go and see it with an open mind, but, like, when you come out, do some googling, like maybe if, because like loads of people when they brought out the leg bar, like those people were like,
I've never seen a leg bar before.
Have you never seen one? Okay, no. See, this is why I find this really weird, because I was sitting there going, oh, I know what that is, but like then not like that. Sorry, that makes it sound like, oh, I know what that is, but like it was just really interesting, the perspective of everyone in the room that got really like excited by the fact it expanded and stuff, and I was like, okay, what did you think it was going to do? Like, where did you think that was going to go?
The thing, people don't have that natural interest in it.
Have you ever been handcuffed or restrained
in any way?
Yeah.
No.
So you kind of get the element of why that would be maybe, I don't know if you enjoyed it or not, but why that might be interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Definitely. I think everyone in the cinema will have gone like, ooh.
Maybe I'll give that a go.
Yeah.
It's just quite an expensive bit of kit if you don't like it.
Yeah.
Just FYI.
You have to create space in your flat for it as well. Storage.
Go to the London Alternative Market. You can like try them out and stuff.
Oh my god, there we go.
That's really interesting. So, yeah. There's so much.
Googling. Go see 50 Shades and then Google.
Do you want me to send you through some links?
Yes, please.
Okay, fine.
All of the links.
Yeah. All right, fine.
Go and watch this film if your kink is bad films. Like, if you're into like intellectual BDSM, like punish yourself. Go for it.
Amazing.
Thanks for listening, guys. Thanks, Simon, for being here and joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Bye. Thank you guys for listening, and thanks to Simon for joining us. You can find him on Twitter at This Made Me Cool, and you can also follow Banging Book Club on Twitter at Banging Book Club, where we tweet all sorts of fun shenanigans. If you liked this podcast, please give us a rating and review on iTunes. We really appreciate it. And this month in February, we have been reading Nina Is Not Okay by Shappi Korsandi, and that book review podcast will be out in the next couple weeks, so we hope you enjoy that, and we'll see you next time. Bye.
Hold up, what was that? Boring, no flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.